I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
I've been coming here since 8 a.m. to the Tikuya soup kitchen for food to alleviate our hunger and be able to stand up. We are suffering from famine, real famine. I have not eaten anything since this morning. I cannot speak because of hunger.
As Palestinians starve to death in Gaza, Israel's calling up tens of thousands of reservists to expand its war and reoccupy the Gaza Strip. We'll speak to the Palestinian poet Musab Abu Toha. He left Gaza with his family in December of 2023. On Monday, he won a Pulitzer Prize. He's now at Syracuse University. We'll also speak to a pediatric nurse just back from Gaza. But first, President Trump spoke at a $1.5 million a plate crypto fundraiser last night, as Senator Elizabeth Warren's calling for a federal probe over a new $2 billion Abu Dhabi-backed deal using Trump's crypto coin.
So here's the kicker. Binance and the foreign investment firm are going to use Donald Trump's stablecoin to finance their transaction, essentially giving Trump a cut of that $2 billion deal.
Boy,
looks like corruption, smells like corruption.
We'll speak with crypto researcher Molly White. Her recent piece, Trump's Newest Grift: Building a Cryptocurrency Empire While Destroying Its Regulators. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Yemen's Houthi movement says four people were killed and nearly 40 others wounded Monday after Israel bombed a cement factory and a port in the Red Sea city of Hodeidah. They were Israel's first strikes on Yemen in months, coming a day after Houthis fired a missile that struck Israel's Ben-Gurion airport and amidst near-daily U.S. attacks on Yemen. Separately, Israel bombed Lebanon's Bekaa Valley and the Sharifa municipality, targeting what it said were Hezbollah sites. The attacks are another violation of Israel's November 2024 ceasefire with Lebanon. Israeli strikes on Gaza have killed at least 11 Palestinians so far today, with deadly attacks reported in Khan Yunis, Beit Lahia, and Gaza City. The strikes follow Israeli attacks that killed 54 Palestinians on Monday. And as the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, reported, some 66,000 children in Gaza are suffering severe malnutrition due to Israel's total blockade of food and aid, now in its ninth week. Some Palestinians have resorted to eating turtle meat, grass, or rotten or expired food. This is a displaced Palestinian mother in Gaza City.
What I'm doing now is trying to separate rice from bulgur and stones. As you can see, we're forced to eat stones because there is no flour, no food, no water. Nothing reaches us, not even aid. As you can see, I'm sorting this just to silence my children's hunger. The kids are crying all the time from hunger. This is bird feed. It's not fit for human consumption, but we cook it to quiet the children's cries.
On Monday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu outlined plans for a stepped-up offensive on Gaza, saying the Palestinian population, quote, will be moved for its own protection, unquote. Netanyahu did not say how much of Gaza Israel plans to seize. Reuters reports that could include all of Gaza's territory. On Monday, Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, spoke at a conference of Israeli settlers.
We are finally going to conquer the Gaza Strip. We are no longer afraid of the word occupation. We are conquering Gaza, clearing it out, and taking control of every area we enter.
Earlier today, senior Hamas official Osama Hamdan told Dropsite News the group won't re-enter ceasefire talks while Israel continues its deadly assault on Gaza. Hamdan also said Hamas would only disarm if Israel ends its assault and allows for the creation of an independent Palestinian state. Human rights workers have revealed the identity of the Israeli officer directly responsible for the killing of 5-year-old Palestinian Hind Rajab, along with 5 of her family members and 2 rescue workers who were attempting to reach them during an attack on Gaza City in January of last year. A war crimes complaint filed by the Hind Rajab Foundation at the International Criminal Court seeks the arrest of Lieutenant Colonel Benny Aharon, commander of the Israeli Defense Forces 401st Armored Brigade. The foundation filed the complaint May 3rd, which would have been Hind's 7th birthday. In Washington state, police arrested some 30 student activists overnight after they occupied the University of Washington's engineering building to protest their school's ties with weapons maker Boeing. The group Students United for Palestinian Equality and Return are demanding, quote, that our tuition money and our research not be used to fund and fuel genocide, they said. In Pennsylvania, 9 people were violently arrested Saturday at Swarthmore College as police disbanded a Gaza Solidarity encampment that had been named the Hossam Shabbat Liberated Zone in honor of the 23-year-old Palestinian journalist killed by Israel in March. Students are demanding Swarthmore, quote, divest from Israeli occupation, aggression, and apartheid and declare itself a sanctuary campus, unquote. In Michigan, Attorney General Dana Nessel on Monday dismissed charges against 7 Gaza Solidarity protesters at the University of Michigan's encampment. The Guardian newspaper last year exposed Nessel's close personal, financial and political ties to the University of Michigan's Board of Regents, which had been calling for prosecution of campus protesters. This is Amir Maklet, the student's attorney.
This was not about trespass. This was not about a felony conduct. This was the criminalization of free speech, and today the state of Michigan agrees that you still have the right to speak up. But today, we want to remember that this is not the end. There are still students across the country that are facing this persecution. There's still a genocide that is happening in Palestine. And we should never forget that today we still get to stand firm and say, free Palestine!
Free Palestine! In other campus news, UCLA student protesters who were attacked last year by a pro-Israel mob under the watchful eye of police officers have filed another lawsuit, this time against the state of California. The lawsuit details excessive violence deployed by LAPD officers towards the peaceful demonstrators who were hit by some 50 rounds of rubber-coated bullets causing serious injuries. California law prohibits police from using rubber bullets except in extraordinary circumstances. And in a victory for the campus protest movement, the University of San Francisco has announced it's divesting from 4 U.S. companies that have contracts with the Israeli military following a sustained campaign by students. Here in New York, dozens of Columbia University faculty and staff dressed in black walked in a procession and stood outside their campus Monday to call for the release of the abducted Columbia graduate Mahmoud Khalil and others who've been targeted for speaking out for Palestinian rights. Coordinated vigils were also held at Tufts and Georgetown, where scholars Rumeysa Ozturk and Badr Khansouri were also recently abducted by ICE. The joint action across the 3 universities will be held weekly. This is Columbia Classics professor Joe Howley speaking after Monday's protest.
We were standing vigil on our campus today at the same time as groups of faculty standing vigil at Tufts University, Georgetown University, Boston University, all of us coming together on our different campuses to bear witness to the detention of our community members, to the fact that students and faculty are being made into political prisoners in this country simply for speaking out on behalf of the Palestinian cause.
In New Jersey, passengers have been experiencing long flight delays and scores of daily cancellations at Newark Airport for well over a week amid staffing shortages, thick cloud cover, and ongoing construction. The chaos started last Monday after air traffic controllers lost both radar and radio communication with airplanes for 90 seconds due to a technical problem at the Federal Aviation Administration facility in Philadelphia, which has been experiencing outages. The incident led to the controllers taking trauma leave to recover from the stress. United Airlines has canceled 35 round-trip flights out of Newark Airport per day, citing customer safety concerns and calling out the FAA for failing to keep its air traffic control system updated. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has called for an inspector general to investigate the chaos at Newark. The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights has found Customs and Border Protection agents who fatally beat Mexican father Anastasio Hernandez Rojas are responsible for torture. It's the first time the independent commission, which investigates extrajudicial killings and human rights violations, has issued such findings against a U.S. law enforcement agency. In 2010, Rojas was crossing the southern border in an attempt to return to San Diego, where he'd lived for 25 years to reunite with his wife and five children after being deported. He was stopped by border agents who brutally beat and tasered him while he was handcuffed until Rojas died of heart failure. His death was later ruled a homicide. The commission's findings come nearly a decade since his family filed a complaint in 2016. At the time, Democracy Now! Spoke with international human rights lawyer Roxana Altholz, who represented Rojas's wife, Maria Puga, and his family in the case.
Not a single agent in all of U.S. Border Patrol history has ever been held accountable for one of these killings, has ever been disciplined for one of these killings. As far as we know, all the agents responsible for Anastasio's death are still on active duty. They have never been disciplined, much less held criminally accountable for the killing.
In more immigration news, the Trump administration said Monday it would pay undocumented immigrants $1,000 each if they voluntarily leave the U.S. and return to their home countries. Rights groups have slammed the move as coercion, since immigrants are being threatened with detention unless they choose to self-deport. In Western New York, advocates are demanding the release of a group of labor leaders and members of the United Farm Workers who were taken by Immigration and Customs Enforcement during a raid Friday. At least 14 workers at Lynette and Sons Farms were arrested that day and are now being jailed at an ICE facility in the city of Batavia. ICE agents reportedly had a list of names taking the workers in unmarked vans. Meanwhile, Trump officials are in talks with several African nations, including Rwanda, Angola, and Equatorial Guinea, to accept immigrants who are deported from the United States. The Trump administration's already made similar agreements with some Latin American countries, including El Salvador, where hundreds of Venezuelans were sent and imprisoned at a notorious mega prison in March. Several explosions have rocked Port Sudan, the Red Sea city where hundreds of thousands of displaced people have sought refuge from Sudan's civil war. Witnesses blame drones launched by Rapid Support Forces paramilitaries, or RSF, for the latest attacks. On Monday, the International Court of Justice dismissed a genocide case brought by Sudan's military rulers who accuse the United Arab Emirates of backing the RSF by supplying arms, including drones. ICJ justices said they lacked jurisdiction to try the case. Canada's newly elected Prime Minister Mark Carney has arrived in Washington, D.C. for talks with President Trump at the White House today. It's the first face-to-face meeting between Trump and a Canadian leader since Trump imposed steep tariffs on Canada and called for the U.S. to annex it as the 51st state. Ahead of Carney's visit, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said he's skeptical of cutting a trade deal with Canada.
Been basically feeding off of us for decades upon decades upon decades, right? They have their socialist regime, and it's basically feeding off of America.
In Utica, New York, a corrections officer has pleaded guilty to manslaughter in the fatal beating of 43-year-old Robert Brooks, who is incarcerated at the Marcy Correctional Facility. Body camera footage of the December killing shows the group of guards repeatedly punching and killing Brooks in the face, kicking Brooks in the face, chest, and groin. Four of the officers involved were wearing body cameras but did not activate them. Brooks was black. All the officers who took turns beating him appear to be white. Six guards were charged with murder. Christopher Walroth is the first to take a plea deal. He'll be sentenced in August. And this year's Pulitzer Prizes have been announced. Reuters won the Investigative Reporting Pulitzer for its expose of the lax regulations that help fuel the fentanyl trade. Congratulations to former Democracy Now! Producer Laura Gottesdiener, one of the Reuters reporters who won the award. And renowned Palestinian poet Mossab Abu Toha won the Pulitzer Prize for commentary for his, quote, essays on the physical and emotional carnage in Gaza that combine deep reporting with the intimacy of memoir to convey the Palestinian experience of more than a year and a half of war with Israel, unquote. At least 31 of Abu Toha's family members were killed by Israel in Gaza. He'll be joining us later in the broadcast. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, crypto researcher Molly White on Trump's newest grift, building a cryptocurrency empire while destroying its regulators. Stay with us.
And a greeting, a connecting glance. Life is just a jaded game to them. They won't give it a chance. But you know, and I know, that the galaxies are all around us. And life will flow on as long as the grass grows and the water runs.
Freedom is free by Chicano Batman in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Senators Elizabeth Warren and Jeff Merkley are calling for a federal investigation into the Trump family's cryptocurrency venture after a fund backed by Abu Dhabi announced it would make a $2 billion investment in crypto exchange Binance using a Trump-branded crypto coin. The deal could generate hundreds of millions of dollars for the Trump family. In their letter, Senators Warren and Merkley wrote, quote, "The deal, if completed, would represent a staggering conflict of interest, one that may violate the Constitution and open our government to a startling degree of foreign influence and the potential for a quid pro quo that could endanger national security," unquote. Senator Warren also released this video last week blasting the deal.
The United States is getting ready to bless Donald Trump's latest grift. A shady Abu Dhabi investment firm just announced it's going to make a $2 billion business deal with a foreign crypto company called Binance. So here's the kicker. Binance and the foreign investment firm are going to use Donald Trump's stablecoin to finance their transaction, essentially giving Trump a cut of that $2 billion deal. Boy, looks like corruption, smells like corruption. So yeah, the Senate is going to put a stop to it, right? Wrong. Right now, the Senate is getting ready to greenlight the grift by passing the so-called Genius Act next week. This is a bill that would make it even easier for the president and his family to profit off their own stablecoin and oversee their own financial company.
President Trump is headed to the Gulf next week. In related news, last night on Monday, President Trump spoke at a crypto and AI innovators dinner to raise money for a pro-Trump super PAC. Tickets were $1.5 million a plate. The event was held at the President's Golf Club in Virginia. The co-host of the dinner was David Sacks, the White House AI and crypto czar. Sacks is a South African-born tech investor who is part of the so-called PayPal mafia, founding PayPal with Elon Musk and Peter Thiel. On May 22nd, Trump is also hosting a private gala dinner for the top 220 investors in his meme coin. The dinner will also be held at the Trump National Golf Club. The promotion also offers an ultra-exclusive VIP reception with the president and a tour of the White House for the top 25 Trump meme coin investors. The anti-corruption group CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, called the promotion, quote, one of the most blatant and appalling instances of selling access to the presidency we've ever seen, they said. We're joined now by Molly White, an independent cryptocurrency researcher who runs the Citation Needed newsletter. She recently wrote an article headlined Trump's Newest Grift, Building a Cryptocurrency Empire While Destroying Its Regulators. Molly, welcome to Democracy Now! If you can start off, for folks who aren't following cryptocurrency that carefully, explain what cryptocurrency is.
Cryptocurrency is a digital asset, so it's an entirely digital form of speculation, essentially, that allows people to speculate on the value of tokens that are, you know, things like Bitcoin or Ethereum. And it's entirely digital. There is no physical representation. There is no physical asset or service backing the tokens.
And in your recent piece, Molly, you wrote that the scope of the Trump family's cryptocurrency conflicts illustrates a degree of corruption that makes the emoluments concerns of Trump's first term seem quaint by comparison. Could you explain?
Yeah, so Trump's crypto ventures are growing seemingly by the week. It seems like every week something new is announced, whether it's his World Liberty Financial crypto platform or his Trump meme coin or rumors of a new crypto game that his backers are working on. And so he is really allowing for bribery and the types of corruption that we've never seen in the American presidency. You know, he's allowing people to send him money. He is profiting directly from the cryptocurrency industry while he is simultaneously influencing policy, legislation, calling off regulators who previously oversaw the crypto industry in ways that are benefiting him and his family very directly.
And given the fact that cryptocurrency has become sort of the favored money laundering method of criminals, drug dealers, anybody who wants to hide their money, what is the impact of the growing size of the crypto industry in terms of the financial system?
Well, it's definitely concerning. I mean, there is this major potential for criminal activity using cryptocurrencies. We've seen it dramatically increase for use in money laundering, as you mentioned, terrorist financing. Ransomware is primarily these days done with cryptocurrency. And there's very little in the way of regulations or laws that crack down on that type of activity. And under the Trump administration, we've actually seen what few regulations were in place be pared back. The Securities and Exchange Commission, which previously was essentially the primary regulator of the cryptocurrency industry, has been called off the beat. We've seen cases against cryptocurrency companies dismissed with prejudice, investigations of crypto companies dropped. We've seen the cryptocurrency investigations teams at the SEC and the Department of Justice dismantled. And so under the Trump administration, I think we are seeing dramatic expansion of the potential for criminal activity within cryptocurrency, as well as the, you know, complete reduction in consumer protections that would allow those who choose to get involved with cryptocurrency to do so without the fear that they are going to be scammed or taken advantage of.
Molly, how exactly does Trump and his family profit from these crypto ventures? How much money are we talking about? And explain, Trump has a crypto coin, Melania has one. Explain how this works.
Well, Trump has multiple crypto ventures that are directly enriching him. So you mentioned there's the Trump meme coin, which is the token that is themed after him, essentially, and is being currently used as a ticket to this private dinner at his golf course. Melania has a token of her own. The Trumps make money off of those tokens, both in terms of the trading that's happening as well as facilitating the liquidity for those types of tokens. Then there's the World Liberty Financial Platform, which is a yet to be released crypto platform that is nevertheless selling these World Liberty Financial tokens to interested buyers. Trump makes 75% of the protocol revenues from that project, and he owns a 60% stake in the company. He and his family sort of maintained the illusion that there was an arm's length relationship between the project, despite it being entirely themed after Trump. Prior to his election and inauguration, but after he was inaugurated, they sort of gave up that facade and obtained a majority stake in the company. And then Trump has sort of an endless list of additional crypto ventures. He has his NFT projects. He has sold crypto-themed sneakers. You know, there has been reporting that he is working on a crypto game. His Trump Media and Technology Group, which is the company that is behind the Truth Social platform that he controls, is also getting into crypto with a partnership with Crypto.com to launch crypto ETFs, exchange-traded funds. And there's also reporting that they are considering launching their own token. So the list really goes on. And so far, I think he has raised close to $1 billion, or he has profited in close to $1 billion from his combined ventures. That number is only continuing to increase as there are deals like this stablecoin being used by the United Arab Emirates Investment Fund. And as, you know, multiple new ventures are being launched as we go on.
And of course, the Trump administration has claimed that all of Trump's investments are in a blind trust, that basically his sons run the company, not him.
Right. That is the claim. Although he's made varying claims, he's even claimed not to profit from crypto at all, which is plainly untrue. But I think that, you know, frankly, it is not fair to say that he has divested from crypto ventures when it is controlled by his sons. His sons are profiting, and ultimately he is profiting. You know, he should not be making policy decisions or influencing policy in ways that benefit his family, quite plainly. And I don't think that the claims that he has divested are accurate whatsoever.
Molly White, can you talk about the latest push by the Senate Democrats? Tell us more about the legislation that they want to change on cryptocurrency pending in Congress. What did the so-called Genius Act, a bill backed by the crypto industry, call for?
So the Genius Act is primarily intended to regulate stablecoins, which are a category of crypto assets that are intended to maintain a peg to some other form of asset.